ध्यायामोदबलावकुण्ठनवतीं तेजोमयीं नैष्ठिकीं स्निग्धापाङ्गविलोकिनीं भगवतीं मन्दस्मितश्रीमुखीं वात्सल्यामृतवर्षिणीं सुमधुरं सङ्कीर्तनालापिनीं श्यामाङ्गी मधुसिक्तसूक्तिम् अमृतानन्दात्मिकामीश्वरीम् Shankara continues with Devi's description as well as explaining about the various siddhis that a person might get while worshipping Devi. So in the next shloka, Shankara praises Devi and the aspect of Devi, that aspect of Devi which is termed as Pativrata, or like one who is devoted to her husband. So Devi is a wife who is devoted to her husband Sadashiva, and how such devotion can help. So that is what Shankara is explaining. So we will learn the shloka first and then try to see as to how that can be equated with Vedanta. So not just by telling that okay, a woman who is devoted to her husband, she alone will stay or live a good life. That's not the the deeper significance of the shloka is much more than that, because if that was the case, then that means like the scriptures will not speak about sannyasa itself. So sannyasa itself means that we have to try to get away from the world as much as possible. So being devoted to one's husband, that's not the goal of Vedanta. So if a person learns Saundarya Lahari and doesn't understand the significance or the importance of the entire work as gaining devotion towards Devi, who is Nirguna Parabrahman, and thereby leading us to that Advitiya Satyam, if we don't know that, then we will be just quoting shlokas like this, the 26th shloka of Saundarya Lahari, and saying that Shankara has said that Pativrata, or if a person, Shankara speaks about Devi as a devoted wife, that means we also have to be devoted. So that would be the meaning that we will take from this particular shloka. So another deeper, like another not that deep meaning, but the simple meaning is a person who worships such a Pativrata, he'll not have any destruction. So that's what destruction of enemies is, the effect of this shloka. But we can, or there may be people who just quote this shloka and say that Shankara speaks about Devi as a devoted wife, therefore we have to be a devoted wife. So I will not learn Vedanta, I have to look after my husband. I will not learn, I will not go for Paramartha's discourse because I have to take care of my husband. I cannot listen to CDs, I cannot read to I can't read books, or I cannot listen to MP3s because I have to cook for my husband. So all those are like escapism. So Vedanta doesn't believe in husband-wife itself. That concept itself is something which is an illusion. It's like any other relation. There is nothing great about like husband-wife relation. So we may argue saying that Shankara says that human birth is something very great, thereby or therefore husband and wife relation, that's what brings about human birth, therefore it is something very sacred. If we say that, then we need to learn things in the proper way. We need to understand how scriptures speak about all these things. So in ancient times it is said in the scriptures, Dharma Shastras as well, that a husband and wife, that the only reason for marriage is progeny. So once like you beget children, then the husband and wife have to live like brother and sister. So that's how Shastras define it. But it's not the case that happens. And rather than for progeny, like, or forgiving or like bringing new births to this world, the main purpose of marriage itself is desire. That's it. Like either lustful desire or emotional support. So marriage, the main essence of marriage, which was just progeny, that is not the case today. So the case today is either it's all desire, either lustful desire, or it's emotional support, that okay, somebody is with me throughout my life. So that's not how the Shastras say or Shastras see. So when Shankara speaks about a Pativrata here and the importance or the greatness of such a thing, he means a person like a Pativrata who considers her husband as Brahman, and the husband also is learned. The husband is also a devout follower of the spiritual path. Only then, like, marriage can lead to bliss. Else, like, we may find various relationships, worldly relationships, we'll find that marriage is something like the husband and wife are closely related. They love each other. Everything will be there, but still something will be lacking because it cannot take us beyond death. So any relationship cannot take us beyond death, because death itself means that we are something limited. So the body, mind, intellect complex that we consider ourselves as, that is never eternal. So it can never be eternal. So superimposing or assuming that the body will be eternal is a big blunder. When we say my husband, that means it's a relationship between either the body, or I between two bodies, or between two minds. It's not a relationship between the self. So the body and the mind, or all those have birth that happens again and again. So a person cannot become eternal with respect to the body or the mind or the intellect. The only way to attain immortality is going beyond death, and that's what Shankara speaks here. So a person who worships Devi, a person who worships Ishvara with ardent desire and says, "Oh Ishvara, I have only you, like I totally surrender to you," such a person will be able to go beyond death. So in the case of women, like, or a lady, it's not worship of husband or devout worship of husband that takes her beyond immortality. The only way to go beyond immortality is by gaining the grace, or by apprehending the grace of Ishvara. That's the only way. And with that will come the knowledge that I am the self. I am the ever-present self. I am the self which is eternal, which is immortal. So that's the only way to gain immortality. Though Shankara here says that a person who is Pativrata, a lady who is Pativrata, who is very devout to her chaste or chastity, I guess, like that's the word used. So a person who is chaste, a woman who is chaste, she'll be able to protect herself and her husband. So such a notion is only at the worldly level. At the worldly level, like, you can live more, like live for 100 years more. That's the only thing you can have, and you may get like a better birth in the next, or better place in the next birth. You'll have a better birth so that you can enjoy more pleasures. But there will be no end to such pleasures. So worldly pleasures, anything with respect to people, anything with respect to the world, that cannot make us immortal. But when we know that Devi is a devout wife, so Devi is so devout that she is part of her husband. That's the important part there. So Devi has, like in the previous, one of the previous shloka, Shankara spoke about Devi having taken the entire form of Shiva, not being content with half of Shiva, she took the entire body of Shiva. So that is what is to be done. So that means, like, there is no difference between two people. So if a husband and wife have to become indifferent to each other, so the only way that can be achieved, the only way a person cannot or shouldn't differentiate or distinguish himself or herself with her partner, the only way that can be done is by knowing that everything is an illusion in Ishvara. So that's the only way Bhedam can be removed. There is no other way like Bhedam can be removed, because we can, like, the husband cannot become the wife, because the husband's, he has his own form. So that form cannot change to another form. So we may try, like, we can try as, or like as much as we can of changing the form. Like, we may be able to grow hair, we may be able to do makeup like a woman, but we will never become like a man. Cannot become a woman cannot become a man. So the only way Bhedam, the only way that Bhedam vanishes is by knowing that everything is Ishvara, by seeing Ishvara everywhere. That's the only way Bhedam can go. And in such a case, there is no my husband, because Bhedam has vanished. That means everybody is Ishvara. So Devi has, like, Devi is a devout wife because she doesn't differentiate between herself and Shiva. That's the reason why she is, doesn't differentiate. So she doesn't differentiate, therefore she is a chaste wife, and therefore it helps both of them. Like, it takes them to the state of immortality. So immortality is not by becoming a chaste wife, but immortality is achieved when duality vanishes. And duality can vanish only when we see everything as Ishvara. Such should be the relationship. So we should, if we take the literal meaning here, then we will end up in marriage, and then we'll try to be a, like a woman would try to be a good wife for the husband, and then end up nowhere. So we'll go on a person will go on try to please her husband. It's the human mind. The human mind can never be pleased. The only way to please a human mind is by giving it realizations. Realization is only when a person can become content, satisfied and pleased. All other things, like today, it may seem to be pleased, tomorrow it will vanish. So if the wife tries to please the husband, then after she grows old, then she will understand that, oh, I pleased him that didn't help at all. It neither helped him, it neither helped her. So we should understand that we should prioritize things that we have in life, that we want to achieve in life. And we should stick to the priority. We cannot say, oh, I want realization, but I will do what my father says. I want realization, but I'll do what my husband says. I want moksha, but I'll not work towards it. So it's like telling, I want to go to New York, but I'll not catch the train. So you cannot reach New York. So if a person wants to achieve the goal, knowing the goal is just one step. That will not take you to the goal. You have to work towards it. And that working towards it means that you are prioritizing it, and you are making it the high priority thing in life. So if we have to jot down whatever we have to do in life, whatever desires we have, the very first thing that should come in our mind, which should be the topmost priority, should be moksha. Oh, no. Hariram said that, like, I need to join Vedanta course, therefore the top priority is Vedanta course. So that's not the priority. Vedanta course itself is one of the best way to moksha. So the goal has to be moksha always. If the goal is moksha, then automatically a person will join Vedanta course. A person who gets the opportunity of joining Vedanta course but says that, okay, I want moksha, but still I'll not join Vedanta course for X or Y reason. Whatever be the reason, like this reason or that reason, such a person will never realize. At least in this birth, he will be very far away from realization, because if we have a goal in mind and if we prioritize it, if we say, this is the high priority goal, this is the high priority task that I have to complete in this birth, that overrides or overrules all other priorities, then I will be joining Vedanta course. If the opportunity is there, if there is way, then I will join. So a person who gives such escapisms or means of, like, telling that, okay, I will live like our Subramanian Iyer, I will live like Hariram's father, can live, be married and still be spiritual, then we need to look at people who are like that. We need to find out whether how many couples have been successful? So if we take our friends, like our spiritual friend gang itself, we'll be able to find out like how many people have been successful in that, saying that, okay, I won't join Chinmaya Mission, but I'll marry and like I'll do what my parents say, I'll do what my husband say, and then it will end up nowhere. So it will start by telling, oh, it like I'll remember God, but I'll still marry. So marriage doesn't matter, it's just a normal thing. So it's like telling, oh, come on, have one puff. It's just one puff. You're not going to smoke one cigarette. It's just one puff. It will start with that, and then it will end with 20 cigarettes a day, and finally death. That's it. So once you enter, like once you give the mind a way to escape, or like a way to reason, say that, okay, because of this reason I didn't do it, that itself means that you will never be able to do it. Because if the mind is so tricky that if you have to get, or if you have to put it in the right path, then you have to say no, there will be no there are no exceptions, there shouldn't be any exceptions. If there are exceptions, then that means it's gone, it will be gone. Like one exception will lead to another exception, it will go on and on and on. So therefore, like, if we have to jot down as to what's our desire, what's the desire, that the highest priority goal, highest priority desire that we have, then it should be moksha. I want moksha. Such a person will know how to tackle the world. He will know when to renounce the world, when to give the world value, and when to give value for moksha. He will know that, okay, I have to this. Okay, my parents. He'll know that even though they are my parents, I know how much value to give them. So it's like telling that, okay, I daily travel in train. I travel in train to New York. From New Jersey, I travel to New York. So daily I meet a person. So like we become like good friends. So there is a limitation, there is a restriction to all relationships. We know that very well. So for a friend we meet, or for a person, like a friend whom we have met in the train and we meet in the train, we know as to like how far to go. And with our parents, we know like when to like, or what's the limitation of relationships. So like we give like the value to a person whom we meet in the train, and a person with whom we work, and our manager, our parents, like each of them, like if we take just five or six people, different people with whom we interact in a day, we'll be able to find that we do prioritize. Like when a call comes from our home, we'll attend it. But let's say that we are in a meeting with our manager. It's a very critical meeting. If phone comes from our parents, we'll just cut the call. We'll ignore the call. Though we love our parents, but still we know as to how much like we must give importance to them. So we know to prioritize things. It is just a matter of applying it to spirituality. So it's not something which is very alien. Oh, this guy is talking about prioritizing. It's a alien topic. I cannot even think about it. Forget implementation. We don't need to think up like that, because it's something which we practice daily. If we just take like two or three activities that we do in a day, then itself we'll be able to find out as to whether we prioritize or not. Let's say there is a meeting at 12 to 1. So in India, if you have a meeting at 12 to 1, then either you'll have food early or late. But if you see the people here, they'll prioritize it. They'll come to the meeting with lunch. So we like the people there, we also know as to when to prioritize things. So that is that's essential. That is an essential part of life. We need to know as to how to tackle it, and we need to know that we need to know as well as remember that the goal of life is not like marriage or any other thing that Shankara is speaking here. The goal of life is moksha, which is realizing that everything is Ishvara. That is the goal. And like whatever we learn, we should try to harmonize it with that. We should try to find out, okay, does this speak against that? If something that Shankara says seems to be against Advaita Brahman or Advitiya Brahman, then we can openly reject it. There is no problem in rejecting it. But it will not be the case. It's only that our ignorance which may make make Shankara appear as if deviating from the truth, but Shankara doesn't. So even the shloka speaks about not devout wife, it's not about devotion that it speaks. It speaks about non-difference. It speaks about equality, or like it speaks about equating or seeing oneness everywhere. So remembering that, we'll learn the shloka. So this shloka is in the raga called Abhogi. If you have any doubts, like you can ask Rajesh. This is the only raga that he knows very well. Virinchi panchatvam rajati harirapnoti viratim vinasham kinasho bhajati danado yati nidhanam vitandri mahendri vitatirapi sammilita drisha mahasamhare asmin viharati sati tvatpatirasau. So this is set in the it's a popular raga called Abhogi. So I don't remember any classical or Carnatic songs or bhajans, like you can ask Rajesh, but there is a film song of Ilayaraja. Indrakye ninda anandame inbattila irannanana. So that is a very popular song of Ilayaraja, I think sung by Yeshudas or SPB, I don't remember. But that's a song which is set in raga Abhogi. It's a very popular raga. So as explained earlier, this shloka Shankara speaks about Devi Sati, Sati Bhavam of Devi. So Sati means one who is devout to her husband. So we can automatically sense a double meaning to the word Sati. So Sati means a person who is devout to her husband, but Sati can also mean a person who lives in truth. So Sati means Satyam, a person who is in Sat, we can call it Sati. So a person who is living in truth through oneness. So that is being spoken about here. Such a person will be able to go beyond death, that death which strikes everybody. So death doesn't leave anybody. If we think that, okay, Brahma is lucky because he doesn't die, Vishnu is lucky because he doesn't die, if we think, then Shankara says here, Virinchihi panchatvam rajati. Virinchihi, we have heard the word in many shlokas of Sundar Lahiri. So Virinchihi means Brahma. Panchatvam, panchatvam means death. Vrajati, he achieves. So panchatvam means the initial, like pancha means panchabhutam. So like panchatvam here means attaining that state which is beyond the panchabhutas, or the panchabhutas as we know now, it's like panchikrita pancha mahabhutani, and Lord Shankara says. So after the panchabhutas, after they have become five and after they have undergone the process called panchikarana. But here, like panchatvam, when Brahma attains panchatvam, means he attains a state beyond this. So the initial state, which means that the differentiation vanishes. So he goes to that initial state. That means he as an individual attains death. So panchatvam means death of Brahma. So vidinchihi panchatvam vrajati. So Brahma attains death. Harihi. Harihi means Vishnu. Viratim apnoti. Harihi apnoti attains what? Viratim. So viratim. Viratim means end. So generally viramam means like sleep, but here viratim means end, death or end. End is what is meant there. And kinasho. Kinashaha. Kinashaha means yaman. So yaman vinasham bhajati. Bhajati means he attains vinasham. Yaman also attains vinasham. Oh, if I become, I have a desire now. I should become Yama in the next birth. Then I'll be able to kill others. I'll be able to take others away, but I'll not die. If somebody thinks like that, it is not the case. Yama also attains death. So kinashaha vinasham bhajati. He also attains vinasham. And what about people who have wealth? Like a person who has lot of wealth, will he be able to overcome death? Dhanadaha. Dhanadaha means, dhanadaha means one who has dhanam. That means kuberan. So kuberan, nidhanam yati. Nidhanam. Nidhanam means the state of rest, or it's like state of death. Yati. He also attains death. Oh, all these are devatas. What about Devendra? If I become Devendra, then I'll become eternal. Then we should read the story of Nahusha and other people who did various yagas in order to become Indra. So Shankara says here, Mahendri, Mahendri, Vitatirapi, Vitatihi api. So Mahendri means La Indra. So various Vitatihi api. Each and every Indra, so that means like in the Indra, Yama and all are like just positions. It's like in politics we have president, prime minister, chief minister, union minister, rural minister and all. It's like these are various positions. So it's also temporary. The life, the longevity of these like Indra and all would be much more than what we have, but still they also have an end. They'll have to get down once 5-year plan gets over. Sorry, not 5-year plan. And the tenure gets over, they'll have to get down. So they'll also die. So each and every Indra, sammilita drisha. Sammilita drisha. Sammilita drisha. Drisha means vision. Sammilitam. Sammilitam means closed. So all the Indras with closed eyes, Vitandri. So Vitandri means they also attain death. So they attain the end state, which is death. So everybody like Brahma, Vishnu, Yama, Kubera, Indra. So everybody attains death. So if everybody attains death, then what is that which is eternal? Asmin maha samsari, asmin, in this maha samsaram, everybody attains death. But sati, sati means you who are pativrata, you who are devoted to the husband or devoted to the truth as well, we can say. Asau, asau means like this. Tvatpatihi, so but you, tvatpatihi, with your husband, you with your husband, viharati, you are enjoying with your husband. That means you are still living with your husband. So when everybody dies, you still remain, you still are enjoying with your husband. So enjoying with your husband means, does that mean duality? So that just means that there apparent duality. So when a person realizes, it doesn't necessarily mean that the world vanishes, because the world can never vanish. That which doesn't exist can never vanish. It's a figurative way of telling that world will vanish when we realize. So when you know that there is no water in desert, then water vanishes. It is a foolish statement to say that water vanishes. So water vanishes, like when you go near, like I saw water in desert. When I went near, the water vanished. Try telling it to somebody, they'll say you are a fool, because there is no water at all. If there is no water, then how can it vanish? So vanishing is not possible. So it may still appear, even like in the water seen in desert. After we know that there is no water, still we may perceive water because of various reasons. But we know that there is no water. So Shankara says in one of the Gita Bhashya, he says that a person who has known that there is no water, he may still run after water because other people are running. But when everyone is running to drink water, as to like, let's say a race, I'll be the first one. So everybody races, and when they race there, they don't find water, they become dejected. But a person who knows, he'll be laughing at his own blunder. That's the reason why Vivekananda said, glad I did big blunders, because he knew that there is no world. So that means like the world might still be perceived, but you know that it doesn't exist, because the knowledge is there that it doesn't exist at all. There is not even like a slight chance of the world existing. So that means even after realization, you may see the world, you may enjoy things, but still you know that they are all Ishvara. So that in that way Devi enjoys. So that's what Shankara says here. So the deeper significance of this shloka is, when everybody else dies, O Devi, you don't attain death. Why is it that you don't attain death, but still you enjoy? Because you have knowledge, because you have merged into the truth. You don't differentiate between yourself and your husband. That means you don't differentiate between anything. Thereby, you are able to rejoice in bliss. So it is not just spiritual bliss, but it is also worldly pleasure. So you viharati. Viharati means you enjoy with your husband. So enjoying means what? What does it mean here? It means that worldly pleasures. So when a person knows that there is nothing here, then he'll be able to portray the role in this big drama of world in a better way. So he'll be able to enjoy things, still be spiritual, still be established in the Atman. And so that's what is clearly shown through the lives of various Mahatmas like Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, Ramana and Amma. So Ramakrishna Paramahamsa didn't have much like worldly pleasures, but Amma has all the worldly pleasures. Like whenever she travels in a car, AC car, Benz car and all, but still she is not affected by it. So she is enjoying, but still she is blissful. And Ramana didn't enjoy anything, but still he was blissful. So bliss is not dependent on the external world, but it is dependent on the knowledge that the external world is an illusion. Oh, you can say all those things like, just try standing out in the cold. Just try like sitting outside your house for 10 minutes. Then you will understand. Then you can see where this Vedanta will go. If somebody says there is no hard rule that, okay, if you know that the world is an illusion, then it doesn't mean that you have to get out of your house. You have to face the extreme situation. You don't have to. It is just the internal attitude that matters. It's not the external thing. When Amir Khan or Tom Hanks is acting in a movie, he knows that the movie is an illusion. But that doesn't mean that, oh, you know that the movie is an illusion, then why not take the gun and shoot in the first place itself? Like when the director starts shooting, then start killing people. Because it doesn't matter. Therefore, do it. If somebody says like, that's a foolish person. We should utilize whatever opportunity we have got. And just because a person is spiritual, just because a person has the knowledge that the world is an illusion, doesn't mean he has to get away from the world. It doesn't mean that he has to face extreme situations and then test himself. So Vedanta doesn't say like that. It only says that internally have a notion. So if let's say there is an unfortunate day when like you have to wait outside in the cold for 1 hour or 2 hours, then you'll not be affected. So you feel the cold, but still you'll not be affected. It's not that we have to go and seek trouble. It only means that when trouble is there, a person who is realized, a person who knows that the world is an illusion, he'll not be affected by the trouble. So that's the huge difference. So Shankara here he's speaking about that state of bliss, that state wherein we won't be affected by anything, still be enjoying pleasures. And in order to do that, we have to become devoted to the truth. We have to wed the truth. That means we have to always live for the truth, whether our parents come in the way, whether our brothers come in the way, whether our partners come in the way, whether our bosses come in the way, still we need to live for the truth. A person who is able to live for the truth and set aside anything and everything, such a person will go beyond death, and he'll be able to rejoice in the world when others are suffering. Others will be saying, "Oh, it's very cold. How are you adjusting? Oh, everything is Brahman. This is only an illusion. My body is suffering. Let it suffer for some time. If it feels like if it is very cold outside, then it is good, because the body will become become more and more cold, and then I won't be able to feel any pain. So that is it. That is good." So you can have like different perspectives of incidents or situations. A person who is realized, he'll be able to handle things in the right way. So whatever happens, he'll still be blissful. That's the reason why Krishna, when his entire clan fought amongst themselves, still he was happy. But if it is with us, we'll say like, "Oh, my mother is suffering, my brother is suffering, my father is not spiritual, my partner is not spiritual." We'll say that, "Okay, I'm worried about them, that they are not spiritual." When we ourselves are not spiritual, we'll try to say, "Okay, I'm worried my mother and father, they are not spiritual." So we try to worry, but like if we were in Krishna's state, we should think as to how we would have responded to that situation when the entire Yadu clan or the Yadavas started fighting amongst each other when they drank nectar, not nectar, sorry, when they drank wine and became like too much into it. But Krishna was able to maintain his calm. He was able to maintain his composed state and laugh at it. So that is the state of a jnani. So he'll not, it's not that Krishna escaped from everything. Like when the time was there, when he had to react to the world, he did that. So when Bhishma was about to kill Arjuna, Krishna got down from the chariot and he took one of the wheel and then pounced upon Bhishma to kill him. So Krishna had made the promise, he had made a statement, that pratijna, that he will not take any weapon. But still he took the wheel of the chariot to kill Bhishma. So Bhishma mentions it at the in just before Vishnu Sahasranama, he says there. So Krishna didn't think, "Okay, I gave pratijna, I gave promise." But he, like, whenever the situation was that he had to respond, he had to react in a bad way, he did that. But even when situations were worse and he thought like this is not the right time, the time has come for the Yadu clan to get destroyed, so let them get destroyed. I'll just stand aside and watch. I'll be blissful. So that is the state of a jnani. That is the state of a person who worships Devi and attains that state, who sees Devi everywhere, and then he'll attain that state wherein he'll be able to enjoy worldly pleasures but still be blissful. Whereas now we are enjoying worldly pleasures and are suffering due to the sorrow which is hidden in them. But once we realize, once we worship Devi, once we know that everything is Devi, we will be able to enjoy things the same way that a worldly person is enjoying, but internally we will be able to be unaffected and blissful. That is the purpose of learning Saundarya Lahari, so that we can achieve that state which Devi achieved. We can achieve the state of Devi through seeing oneness everywhere. That is the import of this shloka. We'll continue with the next shloka in the next day. Hari Om.